The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, the SDR Show. This week, MTV icon Dave Holmes comes on the SDR Show. We talk about old MTV days, him and Jesse Camp, and just a really cool guy. We get into various reality shows, the new his take on the real world. Really nice guy. We get into it deep, so to speak. We do this every Wednesday, every Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Go to gasdigitalnetwork.com to watch us live every single Wednesday, Saturday, 9 p.m., or just share this anywhere. I just want you to be a fan. Get it out there. Tell people about the SDR Show. Why the fuck not? So here it is right now, the Dave Holmes episode of the SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show.
It is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me for the first time in a while with a nonsensical, is it a beanie? No, what is that on your head?
No, it's the headband, but I cut my own hair now during the pandemic, and I kind of have fun with it because I have the headband to play with, and this is the new haircut. But it grows in so quickly, buddy.
And it looks all right, though. I'm not gonna shit on it. It looks pretty good. It's Gino Visconti.
I don't care either way, but I like when you shit on it. You know that.
I think it looks all right.
Buddy. How you been, man?
Yeah, Now I'm down to, I think, somewhere between 40 and 45 pounds, I think. 35, 45, ooh. I'm down. Since the pandemic, so I'm pretty happy about
it's
that.
It's almost like people like me and you, even though we're on opposite sides of the fence on the whole pandemic thing, a year later have made the most of it, and I think we both look better than ever now, yeah. A year after the pandemic hit.
Where Shannon looks like garbage.
There's no way I would have sex with her while she screamed, I hate you, daddy. Right there with you. I get it.
Yeah. What? All right, so... Right now, it's very interesting to have this guy on because I think that it's, you know, I will use him as the guy that was far more successful as what I wanted to do. He's an actor, host, author, currently editor for Esquire. We all know him as, you know, one of the main dudes from MTV for years. Yeah. Came in second on I Want to Be VJ. We'll get into all of it. And host of the Homophilia podcast, co-host of the Troubled Waters podcast. It is Dave Holmes. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good, good, very good. I have to tell you, good. Starting off, a very interesting little side story that sort of parallels our lives a little bit.
Okay.
Okay. For me, the year, I believe, was 1990.
Okay.
My mother ran a comedy club when I was a kid, and she became one of the waitresses at her club, ended up becoming a heavyweight at MTV, right? Yeah. I forget her name, a long time ago. Oh. And okay. I was super desirous of being a VJ on MTV.
Sure,
I tried to find this video. I wish I could find it. I don't have it, but I'll tell you what happened was that my mother spoke to her. I have a son. Blah, blah, blah. He wants to do this. He loves music. He's really into cult, blah, 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 whatever. She says, all right, for you, to my mother, have him send in a 5-minute tape and maybe we could see what we could do, right? So I rented a video recorder, had my brother help me, and I put together like this 4 or 5 minute of me just introducing videos. I played guitar like a jackass in it at one point. You know, I had really long hair and just a real jackass. One of the shots I did was like in a mirror, and then you pulled back and you saw that I was in a mirror. Like really just hacky nonsense. But
oh, good.
What happened
good
was
1990 video
very 1990s,
stuff,
right?
Yeah.
What happened was the woman called me and said, we really like your tape. We want to get you to potentially come in. We're narrowed it down to about 8 or 10 people. And we'll follow up with you soon, right? Never heard from them again. And then Steve Isaacs, who was just a younger, better-looking, cooler version of what I was trying to do, got the job.
I'll be damned.
Yeah, and he looked.
I know him.
If you go back to 1989, 1990, Ralph.
Yeah, yeah.
Same exact look. The long hair, the dark. Like uh-huh. We were, but he was just better-looking, in better shape, more accomplished, and he got the job.
I'll be damned. He's a good guy. He lives out here now.
I became friendly with him because I was a DJ at the Limelight And he used to come in a lot. And then when Pearl Jam did their first show in New York, I was a DJ and promoter there, and he was a big proponent of Pearl Jam. So he came in for that show, and we kind of talked and bullshitted, and, you know, I cursed him for stealing my job, basically.
Wow. Okay, Limelight, I've got a million questions.
So it's not about me. We can ask that for sure, but I want to go back to your version of that story, obviously. Uh-huh. It was, I want to be a VJ. Jesse Camp was the dude who won, who I became friendly with years later when he put out the Jesse Camp and the Cool Kids record.
The 8th Street Kids.
Yeah, 8th Street Kids. He came radio show.
That was 99.
Yeah, that was pretty wild. So let's hear from your perspective. Obviously, it went a lot better for you than it went for me, but you
know if we can say that.
Well, I think we definitely can say that, Dave, but thank you.
I worked there for a while, but so that was something that I did not, I don't know that I knew that I was getting myself into when I showed up. I was in New York. I was an advertising guy at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was like fucking off at work, which is all I did. And I was on billboard.com because work was the only place where you could check the internet at the time. And so I would do that every Thursday when the charts came out, because I'm nerdy like that. And there was like on the sidebar, there was a news story about how MTV was doing an open call for VJs. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I want to do that. So I called in sick to work. It was the next Monday or the Monday after. And I called in sick and I went and I stood in, I got there like 4 a.m. and I stood in line and they like let me in, and I, you know, there were like a bajillion people in line, and we all had to like read a cue card and answer a few questions and whatever. And then they sent me off to another room to talk to another bunch of people. And they were like, you know, we'll let you know if you made the top 10 by Tuesday at midnight. And then Tuesday at 11:58, they called me in my railroad apartment on the Upper East Side. And were like, can you come in tomorrow?
Wow.
Because you're in the top 10. And I was like, well, I better call in sick to work again. and so I did. Yeah. And then that whole thing took place over, like, we were on the live show, like, you know, which was a 1-hour show at the time, like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then there was a Saturday event where the viewers could vote, and I didn't win.
But you came in second.
I did come in second. Well, right. I guess I was, I don't know if I came in second, but the way that they announced it, he and I were like the last two there. Right. So I don't know if we were actually first and second. We were just the most different, I think.
It was just funny because here's a good word for everybody. The dichotomy of the two of you, you know, polar opposites.
Yeah.
He was just like, you know, almost seemed like a caricature. You never really believed that maybe it was an act, but I don't think it was an act. I don't know, but I never thought it was an act versus you.
If it was an act, he was committed to that act. I never saw him out of it.
Right, right. And you were like almost like a Matt Pinfield-y type of an encyclopedia of rock knowledge, right?
Kind of. I was at the time pretty nerdy, and I was lucky in that like the area of music I would have to know about was pretty narrow.
It was back when you still believed you needed depth and talent to do this. And you're like,
sure,
I'm so well equipped for this, and let me show them what I have. And then it becomes, look at this nerdy geek. It's so funny how we used to believe you needed talent to get that, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, you just had to show up and answer some questions. And you had to find somebody who liked you and whatever. So yeah, no, I got crazy, 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 crazy lucky. Yeah. But I did not get the job. What did happen was Jesse did. And I was like, I kind of, you know, I saw it coming. Who in the MTV demographic isn't going to vote for Jesse?
Right.
Given the choice, like knowing that this guy could potentially be on live TV would be like funny, you know,
It was more like almost like a modern Pauly Shore, where it felt like a character, even if it wasn't, it felt like a character where you felt like maybe, okay, like a Kurt Loder or whatever you want to say, like someone who was more, you brought some sort of credibility to the position versus someone who was a character.
Okay. Yeah. Well, okay. Thanks.
At least from my perspective.
What's going on? Who's talking?
I think that was Gina fucking up everything.
I had to turn my ringer off. I'm sorry, guys. Go on.
That's okay. Was that your ringer? Does your ringer yell at you?
It's like a ringer. If you hit the button, it becomes Facebook Live. I'm an idiot. I apologize.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. Facebook Live.
Wow. Is it,
yeah, you know how it is.
17
like
already?
You go to hang up, but you have fat thumbs and you hit the wrong button. Then you panic and you see what you saw like a moment ago if you rewind.
I've certainly been there. But there was a wrap party afterwards. And I remember just being like, lose well. Just go and lose well. Like, go. Because it was, you know, 3 or 4 days that I'd spent with, like, I was 26, I think. And all the PAs who were in charge of me were around that age. And we all kind of got along. And I was like, just everybody give me your card. And then, you know, I was like, I'm going to feel how I feel about this alone later. But right. Now I'm going to just collect as many business cards as I can and just call them on Monday until they either say, hey, come in and let's have a meeting or stop calling me. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, enough people said, come in for a meeting. And then, you know, like a month after that, I had a show. It was
right. I heard like that you were doing, like odds and ends work. And then day the beach house comes and they just say to you, hey, you want to go live in 30 minutes or something like that?
Yes.
And that's how you got your own show. What's crazy about that is I would understand, and I wanted you to elaborate obviously, but I would understand that more. Like we had years ago, Julia from Fuse, you know, Mistress Julia, who the rock girl from Fuse.
Yeah.
She got on Fuse. She was the front door receptionist and they had no money and they just needed somebody because they were a brand new network. And they're like, all right, you're pretty, you know, rock, get on camera. Right.
Yeah.
But this is not MTV 1980, whatever, 80, whenever you had started. MTV is already a huge entity. The thought that they would just say, hey, dude, we need somebody.
It seemed crazy. It's so crazy. Everything about it. I look back at it and like me now in 2021 has a panic attack about it. But like at the time, the whole place was so loose and fun. And like, you know, it was very like irreverent and very like it still had that early MTV spirit of like chaos and anarchy, even though, I mean, you know, most things were really well produced. But if things went wrong, then that was also part of the charm. Mm-hmm. You know, and there wasn't like a YouTube to like, if you fucked up, you wouldn't be haunted by it for the rest of your life. It would just be gone, you know? Yeah. When I was doing the pilot for what would become my first show, MTV Live, like all of the people who normally hosted it were at the beach house and they needed a host. And they were just like, come do this 90-minute live show. Person who's never done TV before, here you go. I was too stunned to say no. And so, it just all worked out. It's real weird.
And then, so from that moment, when you're doing the first live show to becoming a contracted MTV employee, where they gave you an actual, like, okay, you're now doing this. Was it a week, a month? Was it a long time before that happened?
That the pilot that I was shooting got picked up. And it was a summer show that debuted in like mid-June or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it was really, my folks were in town. I remember that. And they called my answering machine in my apartment and said that they were going to like give me a contract. And it was just the wildest. And that was in like May of 1998. And
it's crazy. It's also, there's a long history of the people that come in second on these reality type contest shows always do better than the winner. It's just kind of weird that happens.
I think some of the pressure is off.
Yeah.
You know? Also, in my case, I will say being the music nerd underdog really helped because the people who staffed that place were also in real life music nerd underdogs. And I think that they like clicked with me as a person and were like, let's give them some. Mm-hmm. And so...
And there's also that increasing pressure-free angle. Wouldn't you argue that we've been watching years and years of American Idol where, all right, they took this guy and Ruben Studdard won, but let's take Daughtry because no one liked him and watch us take the underdog. Right. And you're playing with house money. You know what I mean? You're like, watch us make you guys look dumb for not taking this guy as the winner. Right, Dave?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's, it ends, in the case of like American Idol, it ends up being better because I think the American Idol people own less of you if you don't win.
Yeah.
Right,
like
right.
Winners are, you know, owe them 10% of every meal everything. That they cook for the rest right. of their life. You know, but if you're in fourth, then it's like, you know, a year or something like that. And then you can kind of do what you want.
Did you and Jesse become friends at the time?
Super roommates.
Wow.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Oh, that would have been cool.
It wouldn't have.
No, I was biting on that. I bit on that. I was like, yeah, totally. You did.
Yeah, no. No, I mean, we were like friendly, but I was 26 and he was 18.
Oh God, I didn't realize he was that young. That's nuts.
He was so young. So, yeah, I mean, he was like, you know, we got along at work, but it was never like, right. let's hang out or whatever afterwards. You know, I don't know where he like lurked in the city and he was too young to get into the places where I got drunk on shitty draft beer in 1998.
That's funny. You know, it's funny. I don't know if this, I'm sure your experience was obviously far more successful and far better than mine. But for about a year, I was a VJ for VH1 Classic, right?
Oh, wow.
And what they did was you came in on a Monday and you filmed for 8 hours straight, just the lead-ins and, you know, lead-outs of every video. You got paid dog shit for one day and then you'd be on the air for 2 weeks and people thought you were there every day, but you weren't. Right. I'm sure your experience was not that. You're live, so it was probably far more enjoyable.
On MTV2, where I also did some stuff, they would do it that way. You do like a week's worth in one day all around the city. But even that was fun. It would be like in groovy locations around the city. It'd be like Sammy's Romania.
I was in a fucking shitty basement. I hated it.
Okay.
We didn't even have teleprompters at VH1 Classic.
Wow. Well, see, that's fun. Yeah, we didn't at MTV2.
No, we had to read a script verbatim, but we didn't have a teleprompter. I had to put a script on a stool in front of me and was like kind of looking at it. And if I even altered one word, they made me do it over again.
Oh, how terrible.
It was awful.
That's no fun at all.
Yeah, I did not enjoy it.
Yeah, it was kind of loose on MTV2 in that way. But no, with MTV, so the live shows obviously were live. And then there were a lot of, like in those like boy band years when the network was super flush, mm-hmm. they would like try out new show concepts live on the weekends. So it'd be mm-hmm. like a big, like, you know, 3-hour live event on a Saturday for like a game show idea that they were trying to work out or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that was all live. But like Say What Karaoke, which was like the Monday through Friday show that I did for a couple of years, we would do whole seasons in a week.
Oh, wow.
We were on the TRL set. And so like TRL would break on a Friday and they would move the set out and move ours in, and we would shoot like 7 episodes a day, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever, like just get it all done. And I would go into a fugue state of, you know, just like operating on some of it is on YouTube now, and I watch it and I'm like, I recognize that is me, but I don't.
What happened?
Yeah. It sounds like something I would say, and I guess I said it, but I don't remember saying
it. That had to be me.
Yeah, it's weird. a lot of like what they call the strip shows, they would do like the half hour Monday through Friday shows. They would shoot all at once.
And then did you get like legit fired, or was it when they stopped playing music, you just didn't have a place there anymore? Like what actually happened?
No, you know, and this is the story for everyone I've talked to, except for like the super, super big names. I'm sure like... You know, like Carson got a, you know, Carson's probably still getting paid by MTV somehow. But for the rest of us who are like sort of the supporting players, it's just your contract ends.
Mm-hmm.
Like you get 6 months and then you get like, you know, a series of years, like 1 year or 2 year periods. I was there for like 4.5. So I got 6 months and then 2 years and 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of that you're on a retainer. They pay mm-hmm. you by, you know, whatever. And at the end of 4.5 years, those last 3 months, I was just less busy. Like they would just call me in for less and less. Uh-huh. And I would turn on the network and be like, oh, this is a new show with someone I don't know. Or I'd stop by the studio and be like, I don't recognize anyone here.
Your key card stopped working.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it's not, there was never a last day. It was just like, I got to the end of my contract period, but that was maybe 6 weeks after the phone just sort of stopped ringing. There was never a last day, but then also there was like never a, hey, goodbye. This was fun. And yeah, and that's the same for everybody. It's, well,
if
it's
they ever
weird.
Start playing videos again, maybe they're just going to renew your contract. You never know.
Maybe they will. Maybe they will. You know, I don't, they won't. I'm too old for the audience that they are. Well, by the way, they did, the BTS did an Unplugged a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, that's cool. I heard they're bringing back Unplugged in general.
They are, yeah. But what was strange was, like, I knew that it was on and I forgot to tape it. And it was on at like 7 and I remembered it 7:55. And so I saw like the tail end of it. And then as a trained MTV viewer, although not in a while, I was like, oh, I missed this one, but I'll tape the 10 o'clock one. Because you know how they would just, you know, they would play the big things every few hours. It was that 38 episodes of Ridiculousness and then Pitch Perfect 2 and then 72 episodes of Ridiculousness and then Teen Mom OG and then 112 episodes of Ridiculousness. It's like there must be a streaming something or other. There's a way that you can on-demand watch all this shit, but there is not just a network probably, that you turn on.
I bet you it's on their MTV.com or something, maybe. I mean, I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know.
I don't know. That's funny. I tell you, I can't stand Ridiculousness.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
So I have a couple other MTV questions and we'll get into some other stuff. But
okay.
So do you have any like standout? I did radio for a bunch of years, interviewed a ton of bands, and there's standouts of like best and worst moments of things that went either really bad or really well, because you either get to meet your idol or your idol shits in your face, whatever. Mm-hmm. Do you have a few of those moments that stick out as part of your tenure with MTV?
Oh, yeah. I did 120 minutes for like 6 months. Mm-hmm. That was the greatest thing that ever happened to me in my life, because I watched that all throughout the 80s and 90s in high school and college. And that blew my mind. Like to be on that set even was like, this is, my life is insane. And through that show, I got to interview Joe Strummer from The Clash.
Great. Yeah.
A few months before he died. He's the coolest. And like, so, I mean,
by the way, you indicated how bad my career was. I interviewed him 3 months after he died. That's how bad.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
I see what you did there. I liked it.
Shannon hated it.
I'm still biting on Dave's last bit, but I liked it. I liked it. Go on.
I got to interview like Liz Phair and Tori Amos and
Modern Everyday Sane Psycho. I have told my niece to listen to she's not a musician, she's an artist, but I'm like, you have to listen to her music because I think that album's incredible. Sorry to interrupt you, Dave.
I do too. That song came up in a spin class that I did online yesterday.
Dave, stop. Now you're just trying to impress Shannon. Stop it.
What's
the song, Dave? Help me out, because you think you keep me up. That's Modern Every Second.
Extraordinary.
The hell are you? It's like, I told her.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, like trolls are bigger now than ever, but it's like, have you ever thought it's you that's boring? Who the hell are you? I think it's one of the most poignant lyrics in the history of music. I do.
Agree.
Yeah,
I agree. Dial it back, Gino. Dial it back.
I couldn't agree more. Because I mean, it's such an underrated album. And Lizard's like, oh, she's naked on the cover to get it. But it's brilliant writing. It is. Sorry, Dave.
It's gorgeous. No. It's gorgeous. And getting it back to running, it's a great running song. It's one of those that, like, when your energy is getting low, positive message,
you
put on Extraordinary by Liz.
You were cycling.
I was cycling, but keep talking.
I use it for running.
Yeah. And it's a good jump rope song, too, I'm sure. But yeah, it's a brilliant song. I love that line. Have you ever thought it's you that's boring? It speaks to both sides. It's like, because we get so caught up in our, like, we listen to this shit and it's like, just wake yourself up. Who the hell are you? You know, and the other one, and I'll just say this since we're on the topic and they make fun of me because it's nowhere near Liz Phair, but as a comedian, as any musician, you ready for this? Britney Spears circus and make fun of me. But the lyric is, there's only two kinds of people in this world, the ones that entertain and the ones that observe. And I love that. And I get it's poppy, but it's almost
What's
as
gripping
as Liz Phair. I've said it. I can't. Yeah. I can't take it back. I can't. I'm out there and I'm loving it, Jerry.
What the fuck? Yes. There's nothing wrong with pop. There's nothing wrong with pop.
And by the way, we'll get into Britney Spears. Obviously, that's on my list. Because he was. You're in the Britney Spears documentary. I think you're one of the first people to ever interview Britney Spears. We'll get to that. But I want to hear more about this. The best and worst moments at MTV. So just continue.
Just getting to like interview people who I legitimately loved and listened to forever on 120 Minutes was great. Also, one that was bad, but it was only bad because of me. Was Michael Stipe. He could not have been better. He was so nice. But I had been there for a year or two, and I felt like I was less in shock that I had the job and more like, oh, I think I know what I'm doing and I can bring something to it. Mm-hmm. And I had gotten like an advance of the I think it was New Adventures in Hi-Fi that they were about they were like promoting, and I had this question that was like, it was deep with wordplay, and it was like, it was a complicated, convoluted question that I was like I was so proud of it. Not proud enough of it to write it down so that I could get it right. So I just started talking and words just sort of came out of my mouth in an order that I did not intend for them to be in. And luckily it was not live.
Did he go, what the fuck are you asking me?
Yeah, he was like, can you explain what you mean by that? And I was like, no, I actually can't. I can't. I forgot.
Turns out I can't.
Yeah, no.
What did you say that? No.
Yeah.
Were you required, like for instance, on nowadays, you do a podcast, you do your own research, you come up with your own questions, and you plan your own show. But in an entity like that, in that high profile position, were you given the leeway to write your own questions and do whatever you want? Or was there specific yes and no topics? And would they provide you or want you to submit questions or whatever? You know what I mean?
Normally it's not as like that one was, I got to sit down with him for an hour and they would take like 20 minutes or something. Mm-hmm. And maybe not even that. So I could be as kind of freewheeling as I wanted to be, which was a mistake. The rest of the time they were very short interviews. So like all the stuff for TRL, it would be like, you would talk to somebody for 45 seconds and then you go into a video. I apologize for my dog. And so it would be like, these will be the three questions, and the writers had written them, and it was like, we have time for this. You will ask this, they will say this. And it just sort of, it was very tightly choreographed. Right. And 120 minutes was a little bit the same, although not as
I remember my first time I called a radio station when I was like 12 and make a request, and the guy picks up the phone and says, say you want to hear Walk Like an Egyptian. I don't want to hear Walk Like an Egyptian. Just say it. And I said it.
Nobody wants to hear Walk Like
an Egyptian. And then they said, what's your name? And then 10 minutes later, I was on the radio saying I wanted to hear that song. I
was just a sheep. That's why he wears the mask, Dave. He's been a sheep since he was a kid. That's why he sits. I'm sorry, go on. Not me.
Were you ever allowed to bring bands to the table or bring ideas for musicians, or that was totally out of your world?
That was out of my world.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. And still, like, I'm on air at Sirius. I do weekends on the Spectrum, and it's like, and even there, you know, like once an hour I can play a different song from within the Spectrum catalog.
Right. Yeah. That was always I did radio for 20 years. And when I started it, I hated the idea that you had a playlist that you can play with. And maybe like even the old request hours were requests within the songs that they were playing. So if someone requested a song that you wanted to hear that wasn't on what they were playing, you couldn't play it. So when I got my own show, the ability to play whatever I wanted was such a free spirit thing that you just program your own show. It was just a great feeling, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll give you a peek behind the curtain for Sirius. I'll like tape my stuff a day or two before, but then, you know, when I'm like an hour before my show starts, I'll like sometimes go on Twitter and be like, got anything you want to hear? Just to like, whatever. Mm-hmm. And A, it's like, it doesn't matter because I've already done it. But B, people will be like, how about this, you know, Frank Zappa spoken word thing? How about, you know, a song from Britney Spears' Circus? And it's like, do you understand how this works? I guess I'd like to be able to have that kind
they
of
They don't listen
form,
to the whatever. Lyrics enough, Dave. These kids, they don't get it. They want to shut stuff down for no reason. When you listen to it, it's like you just know you're better than people, you know?
I do. I do know
that. Like Ralph said it before the show started, Hitler had it right. Sometimes.
Yeah, that's one of my catchphrases. So, you know, I hate keeping to bring up my own stories.
I really missed this. I'm sorry. Go on. I'm sorry.
I used to pre-tape my radio shows once in a blue moon. It was live most of the time. But sometimes if I want to go away for a weekend or whatever, I'd pre-tape. And I pre-taped with a band that was on tour with Damage Plan, which was the two dudes that were in Pantera. And then Dimebag was murdered the 2 days before my show was about to air. And they were talking about how much fun it was on tour with these guys. I'm like, oh, my God, we cannot fucking air this.
We can't do that.
And we had to let one of my staff break into my home to get a copy of a backup show and overnight it to all of our affiliates so they could run something else. It cost me like $1,000 in overnighting fees to get it out there in time. That was in Europe at the time, but thank God that show never aired. That would have ended my radio career.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, crazy. So,
moral of the story: you were in Europe.
Yes, exactly.
It's a long way to go to let us know you went to Europe.
I heard a story on you that I really liked, and I would like you to retell it because it's such a good coming to New York story. Your first experience in New York that involved a cab driver and Club USA.
Yeah. So I, my senior year of college, I was on like the 5-year plan in college because I fucked around terribly. And so by my second semester of my senior year, I had like a class a week and it met like once a week. So I basically was just like hanging out. And so I started really aggressively looking for a job and I wanted to be in New York. So, so I went on a million interviews and sent out a million resumes and got a job at this advertising agency. And so I started like 2 days after graduation. So I had to get an apartment and I got my apartment. I was still like in college and I had nothing. I had like a pillow and a comforter on the floor, on a studio apartment above Elaine's on Second Avenue. And I was sort of starting, like I was finishing up college and starting New York. And I went out with some older friends who already lived there. And I really wanted to go and explore. And they were, you know, conservative Catholic college types. And I wanted to go see some queer shit. And so, so I like pretended to be tired and I went and I hailed a cab and I got in and I was just like, take me somewhere gay and awesome. Mm-hmm. And the cab driver,
by the way, that's Gino's like, catchphrase. He told me mine earlier.
Oh, great.
About me.
It will never work. It will never not work. So this guy was like, sir, you new here, which I mean, was obvious. And I said that I was, and he talked to me about like, you know, what I'll experience in New York. And he said, you know, it's going to be the first 3 months are going to be super hard. But then it's going to get under your skin and you won't be able to live anywhere else. And I was like, I love it. I'm so excited. Dropped me off in the West Village at the Monster. Mm-hmm. And I went in and I was just like, let's be friends, New York. And just went and like, you know, had some drinks and, you know, made friends and stuff. And then went to another place and then another and another. And had, you know, the quintessential all night New York night, which ended at a place called Club USA. That was the one and only time I ever went. I don't remember what part of the town it was even in, but I went there and danced until, you know, Sunday at noon. And then I went, back. I was just like exhausted and wrung out and broke. And I went and I like hailed a taxi to go back to my apartment to sleep some more on the floor. And the same cab driver picked me up.
It's so cool. Love it.
And then I lived in New York for 10 years.
Come on, man.
He might have been, but listen, it was enchanting.
Go on.
It was charming. And he was like, so what do you think? And I was like, you know what? I'm in.
That's cool. And he goes, no, this
never happened to me twice.
That always everyone in New York only gets one cab driver. When you come in, you're assigned a cab driver. That's how it works.
Oh, wow. I wish that were true. He was good.
Yeah. And Club USA was synonymous with the slide. That was
the K-hole.
Yeah, they called it the K-hole, which made no – I didn't know what that meant at the time. But
I didn't either.
You walk up to this – I think it was the second or third floor, and the only – not the only way to get down, but you could take a slide down. That was great, yeah.
When was the heyday of Club USA, if I can ask, Ralph?
I was, it was off peak when I was there in 1994.
Yeah, I was going to say 90, 91.
Oh, yeah. I didn't get her till 2001. So I know. I'm sorry. I'm lame.
Yeah. Where was it?
It was in Midtown. I think it was in the 20s, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. It's been a while, but I worked at Palladium and I worked at Limelight, the two big ones that were there at the time, as an in-house promoter for those two clubs. And Limelight, I was a DJ as well. That's a long time ago. I caught the tail end of it. My version of the tail end, really, like Limelight 86 was when it was insane. And same thing with Palladium. I caught the tail end in 90, 91 era kind of thing.
Okay. It was on East 14th Street.
It was on East 14th? I was close. But Palladium was 14th. Are you saying Club USA was 14th also?
Yeah, Club USA's popular Sunday night party, Bump, which drew hundreds, mostly gay men, will now be at Palladium. So they moved the party. So.
Yeah, they moved the party to Palladium. Yeah, okay. Because it was short-lived Club USA, but it was a great spot. So anyway.
Fun time.
Now I want to move into, which is just fascinating, and you're apparently one of the first people to interview Britney Spears, right?
Well, on MTV, I guess.
On MTV, yes, on MTV. And you were part of the Framing Britney Spears, or at least one of the talking heads on the thing.
Yeah.
Give me just some, like, did you have any indication that any of this craziness was going on? Did you ever become friendly with her? Like anything else like that? Or
yeah, no. I mean, she was like such a star from the second that she arrived, you know? Mm-hmm. And she was great. And I got to interview her like the first or second time that she came in. And that was, you know, when I would like guest host for Carson on the live show, which made me super nervous. And I remember her putting me at ease, and I was like, oh, that's, you're a child and I'm an adult and that should be the other way around. Yeah. But she was just so like professional and on point and, you know, she was great. No, I never became friendly. Because again, she was a child.
Right.
And never stopped me. Okay. Well, that's okay. I never got to know her super well. And then, I never really thought, I was young too, less young, but young enough not to worry about what would come next for any of the people that I was surrounded by back then.
So, but was the documentary, like when you were part of it, was it shocking to you that you were part of it? Like, did you know this already? Because I didn't know any of this watching the documentary. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I knew bits and pieces and those two women who have the Britney's Graham podcast are friends of mine. And I knew, you know, I occasionally would get sent, like somebody would send me one of Britney's Instagram stories and just be like, okay, that's weird. But I didn't, and I knew that there was a conservatorship and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like from a distance, I knew that things had spun out a little bit, but I didn't know the extent of it. And it's, that to me is not really the thing that sticks out the most about it is, you know, I mean, she sure had a rough period, but a lot of people do. The thing that was most, that was like hardest to watch was just how gross everybody was with her when she was really young. Like all the questions about her breasts and all the questions about, is she a virgin and all
this
stuff.
How old was she at that time? I don't even know. What was she like? Was she
17?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Hey, cat. A cat was just in the frame.
Yeah. The cat is also 17. The listener.
Oh, good. It's a good looking cat for 17. But yeah, there was such gross, like, the sexism was really, really gross. I don't think that it was a thing that anyone talked about.
Let me ask you this, Dave, because it's gross now without a doubt, like how the world has become, how we've noticed it now. Like, are you saying it was gross then to you? Because it was so acceptable then, which makes it so much grosser now. What I mean? Like, I'm just asking, when you say gross, so many levels, what are you saying then? Like, no one noticed it, right?
Right. Yeah. That's the thing, is just that, the things that came up. And I will say, I don't think that we ever, like, I don't think we ever did a whole long thing about her breasts or anything like that. But
I did, but that's a whole nother thing. Right. Not important. Go on. Sorry.
I don't know that I ever talked about whether she was or was not a virgin or whatever. There were parts of it that luckily I was old enough and unsexy enough that it would have just been gross if I had brought any of it up. So I never did.
And I like how I was good. When I mentioned kids earlier. You know, what's funny is that we just had Susie Quattro on, who's like a legendary old school rock and roll chick. And I watched her documentary called Susie Q that I recommend to everybody.
Yeah.
And on it, they showed how sexualized she was. She was like 18 or 19 when she started. And she was on a show wearing her leather jumpsuit. Yeah. And a guy, the host of the show, like turns her around and slaps her ass. And I was like, imagine that now. You'd be immediately just canceled. And that was just considered, oh, that's just arrested. What you do. There's a pretty girl on, slap her ass. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. She's a thing to be touched.
Yeah. It's just crazy so that it was just acceptable. It's wild. It's crazy. It is crazy.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's better or worse now. You know what I mean? Like,
it's better hidden now.
Gross, but it was harmless then, but now it's kind of, I don't know. We've become very jaded and it's awful, but hopefully that came across as not as completely creepy, but you know what I mean?
No, it's creepy. Yeah. Yeah. We thought it was harmless back then. I guess.
Yes.
I
think
that's the best way to put it.
Thank you, Dave, for pulling that parachute. Did I say thought?
You did a years ago a podcast called, I'm going to pronounce it, but True Story, real world thing. And now you're doing one for the reunion show. Correct?
Yeah. Yeah. It's me and a guy named Mike Doty, who was in the band Soul Coughing and is now a solo artist. He was a neighbor of mine once I moved to the East Village and we became friendly and we're both like weird pop culture nerds. And so when podcasts started, we were like, we should watch The Real World season one again and just do a podcast about it. And then we did. It's a goofy small thing that has a little cult following, which is fun. But then the Homecoming started airing and we were like, why don't we do it again? So we did. I think the first episode came out yesterday.
That's great. I haven't seen any of the episodes yet. By the way, crazy again, parallels. I was in Cleveland, we're going to say 15 years ago. Uh-huh. And on the way back, I sat next to Dave on a plane and he couldn't believe that I knew the band Soul Coughing.
Sat next to me?
Sorry, not Dave. What's the guy's name? Mike from Soul Coughing. Mike from Soul Coughing. Because I loved, what's that song? Is Chicago Is Not Chicago? And there are a couple others that were great songs. And he just didn't believe they actually knew the band. Because they were at most mildly successful. And that's being nice, right? But
they had a moment.
One song I know and love is what? Circles, right?
Circles is the bigger one. Or Super Bon Bon.
That's the one I know.
Super Bon Bon was the biggest one probably. But Is Chicago was, I think, the first record.
Yes, it was. Which is a really fun record.
It's a good record.
Yeah. He's got a new one coming out called Ghost of Vroom with some of the Soul Coughing people.
That's cool.
That's, I think, out later this month.
So now, are you a big Real World fan?
On and off. Okay. On and off. The first season, of course, is, it's a classic.
Right.
It's a classic. I'm at the exact age where, they were a year or two older than me and kind of aspirational figures when the first season came out. And it was such a cool concept. And I stuck with it for a while. And then they moved in the hot tub and, then things got kind of tawdry and I dumped off a little bit.
I don't even know how many seasons they kept it going.
Oh yeah. There are 30 something.
Wow.
At least. Yeah.
That's
too many,
crazy.
Frankly.
Were you open and out about being gay when you were at MTV, or were you not allowed to talk about it, or what?
I was out. Yeah. I mean, I on the air, I didn't talk about it.
On your own decision, not like anyone said to you, don't mention that you're gay because you didn't want to talk about it.
I do. I remember saying something about like on Say What Karaoke, it was a girl gave a sexy performance and I was like, the straight guys are going to love it. And the producer was like, let's do that again. You said straight guys instead of guys. And I was like, okay. Cause I didn't know that I could be like, no, we're not going to take that again.
Right.
And for the first couple of years, I just didn't want to rock the boat. And then for the second couple of years, I was like, I kind of want to come out, but I don't really know how, and nobody really was there to help, nobody was there to help. Mm-hmm.
There were no footsteps to follow in, so to speak.
There weren't any footsteps to follow in.
Coming out, yeah.
Right. And also, you needed to either say it on the air, which, like, where do you fit that in?
Mm-hmm.
Or do an interview with like a magazine or a TV show or something.
Right.
And the TV shows and the magazines were like, oh, you're gay. Cool. We don't care. That's not going to sell any magazines or make anybody watch a TV show. So like there was no, you look back and it's like, oh, I should have just said something on Twitter. Well, that didn't exist.
Right. Was there ever an openly gay VJ on MTV? I don't think so. Not off the top of my head. Not in the heyday when it was like popular, you know?
No, I don't think so. Yeah. And then, yeah, I mean, you know, by 2008, it all kind of stopped. So for the last 13 years or so, that job doesn't exist. Been in it.
Yeah. I remember I said to someone recently, I was a VJ on VH1 years ago. And she said, what does that mean? Like, it doesn't mean anything anymore.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So, like my teenage nieces and nephews don't really know from MTV at all. It's weird.
It is, because it's so, I hate to say, I don't want to, it's not irrelevant. It seems like a shitty thing to say, but like really they don't, unless you care about teen pregnant moms or ridiculousness, you're not watching MTV, really.
Nope.
You know, it's kind of wild.
It is really, it seemed so young and that it just was like, this will never not be the thing that young people gravitate toward.
But right.
Everything has to change.
Yeah.
Like, you know, at some point it'll be like TikTok.
Of course.
Gross.
Yeah. Just like Facebook and just like Instagram. Now, if you're on Instagram, you're older, you're a kid, you're on TikTok, you know, but it started with Friendster, then MySpace, then Facebook. Yeah. And before Friendster was MTV. That's really what it is.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's kind of what it is. Yeah.
It's amazing. You know? And so anyway, also, I guess now it's 4 years ago. You wrote a book about your life, Party of One, Memoirs in 21 songs. So did you, I'm going to be honest, I didn't read it. I usually try and read before the show, but it was a very busy day.
I'm leaving.
I do know that you voiced your own book, though.
That is it.
I know you voiced it yourself. That much I know.
I did.
Is that something?
Did it right here in this room. Yeah.
Okay, but did you pick 21 songs that meant a lot to you or 21 songs that represented your life? Like what is the...
Kind of. All of the above. Like sometimes they're like the song that like animates the story. And sometimes they're like in the theme of the chapter. And sometimes it was just like, I need a song here. So, cause I've sold this concept and they want this concept. So it'll be this song. But it's, you know, I mean, my life is like soundtracked to music and I am still like hungry for it and I love all kinds. And so
do you still look for new bands that inspire you, alternative rock stuff that you still look for that you're like, oh, I'm still an audiophile?
Yeah. And I find that I'm like, I would much rather get a suggestion from a friend than get served up something by, you know, my Discover Weekly playlist.
Your algorithm. Like,
I've heard some good songs through that, but they never last because it just seems like a machine spat it out to me. But if somebody's like, a friend of mine just was like Arlo Parks. And so I said, okay, I'm going to listen to Arlo Parks. And now I'm obsessed with Arlo Parks.
I don't know who that is, but I will check it out.
Oh, she's great. She's great.
Yeah. By the way, I would have 100% guessed it was a dude. The name
Arlo. It's more of a dude name, but
I would have.
She's a she. I think I thought so too. She's great.
So nowadays you host the Homophilia podcast, you coach Trouble Waters, which I listened to a little bit this morning. It's two comics that debate an issue, so to speak, right?
A good it's way to silliness.
It. Yeah, it's silliness. It's and you work silliness. For Esquire, so that's got to be very fulfilling, I would imagine.
It's so much fun. It's so much fun. I had a column at Vulture like 5 years ago. And the editor of Vulture at the time moved to Esquire to run that site and brought me over. And I was like, you know, I was stunned because I grew up reading that magazine and they were starting to create a lot more content online. And so I started writing for them and it is such a pleasure. And then about a year and a half ago, the site director became the editor in chief. And so now he's in charge of the print magazine. Mm-hmm. So now I get to write for the actual magazine, which by the way, everything I write for the magazine, everyone reads online anyway,
right.
But it's still exciting to like, you know, actually be in print.
Yeah. It's such a funny thing. Like how even Instagram cares. Like if you want to get verified on Instagram, they care more. They want you to see that you have traditional print or something in traditional media representing you, which it seems so counterintuitive to their business model And it's just funny that we still, like, I still care about that too, like traditional media for some reason, but it's because I'm old. A 20-year-old doesn't give a shit.
Yeah. What is the purpose of a paper magazine to somebody under the age of 40? It doesn't 100%. Make any sense at all. And I still
love them. If you're my age, over the age of 50, you need glasses to read it anyway. So what's the point?
That's exactly right. Oh, boy. I'm turning 50 on Sunday.
I'm 51.
And my readers are
Gino, you're 50. You're 52, Gino?
I am 52.
Yeah. Right,
you guys, I would have sworn you were 10 years younger than me, both of you.
Really? Wow.
Right back at, but don't you feel like, and this is what I've been saying, like in the past year, I think a lot of people have aged better and people have aged more than they need to. It's just, we've been so thankful for so much to get through what we have. And I just think like we sit here now, it's like, oh, this is great. This is great. I've never felt better about everything I'm doing. I think we all feel like that now.
Also, Gino, because you believe COVID's not real. That helps.
I think COVID's very real. But here's the thing about COVID, Dave, and you'll get this. Dave,
I don't want to get into it. I just,
Dave, you ever been in traffic on the highway and someone passes you on the right, driving up the shoulder, and you're like, I hope the cops catch him? Mm-hmm. That was me the past year. I drove up the side of the highway. I didn't wear a mask. I just let my immune system do it. And here it is a year later, and we all look better than ever. And that's
everyone. I'm sorry, Shannon. Well, it's my fault. I brought it up.
I don't know if I can connect those two things.
Oh, you don't have to. You don't drink as much as me.
Shannon,
I'm just saying, imagine you did.
Mute Gino at this point?
Oh, pardon me?
Yeah, you deserve this.
Yeah, it's all my fault. all right, so Shannon, let's do this. I can't believe it's been an hour already. We're going to do the first.
Is it really? Oh, okay.
The first time. Concert, did drugs, had sex.
The name of the show is Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. We wrap the show every week with your first experience with all three. And we start with rock and roll by meaning the first concert you went to on your own volition that we're going to know. Not some local band, someone they're like, oh, shit, that's who you went to. Not something your parents dragged you to. Something like, I want to go to this and we're going to know it.
Okay. My parents came with me because they insisted, because it was my first concert and I was 13. It was 1984, Duran Duran, Seven and the Ragged Tiger Tour, Kiel Opera House or Kiel Auditorium, St. Louis, Missouri.
That's a great one. That's really great. Oh, love Duran Duran.
It was so good.
I got to see them a couple of years ago at South by Southwest. They performed and I got to see them there. It was like probably 6 years ago and that was great.
Okay.
But I didn't get to see them in their heyday. You got to see them in their heyday.
I did get to see
them. Save a Prayer for the Morning After. Very underrated.
It's a great song. It's a great song. Yeah, I loved them so much. And I don't know that I could have told you why back then. And I don't know that I could tell you why now. They just were the right band at the exact right moment.
And then that album years later, Ordinary World, was such a great record. That was such a brought them back into the mainstream. And that was so good. I love that record.
Yeah, yeah. And that was like, what was that? 1991 or two.
Yeah, 91 or something like that. Like years after. Like,
yeah, that was 6 or 7 years after you know, their heyday. And it seemed like a lifetime. Like who are these old grizzled?
Right now. And now that's pretty normal that a band puts out a record 5, 6, 7 years later. And you don't think anything of it. But at the time it was like, oh my God, why? It's been 6 years. Oh my.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah, but also you're way younger, so 6 years is significant.
That's true too.
All right, so now you're gonna live forever back then.
Of course.
The first drug you ever did after pot, unless pot's the worst drug you ever did.
Okay.
wasn't the first drug you ever did.
No, pot was. So I mentioned that I went to this like conservative Catholic college, right? I mean, it was whatever. It just had a kind of a conservative student body. It was a homogeneous Catholic school in New England. And one, like I was sophomore, junior, a friend of mine after Christmas break was like, I have something. Do you want to do ecstasy? And I was like, yeah, I want to do ecstasy. But we kind of had to be chill about it because you didn't want to get a reputation for being like a burnout or whatever. And it was very easy to get a reputation for being weird in any way at a place where everyone's alike. So he was like, I have two hits. We're going to do them. I was like, fan fucking tastic. Mm-hmm. And, did you want the story or just the drug?
No,
cause I'm watching into the story. Okay. Good. I didn't even ask. That could have just been a one word answer. Okay. So we took these giant pills and we sat there for like 15 minutes and then his girlfriend called. We were in his room. And his girlfriend called and she was like, come over. And so he's like, I'm going to go over to my girlfriend's room. So he went and left me alone in his room to experience ecstasy by myself in a place where like I was not super keen on telling anyone that I was on ecstasy. So I sat on his bed as it kicked in. And if you've done it, it kicks in a way that like suddenly your whole body starts to like tingle and your heart goes crazy and you sweat. And I was like, well, I'm dying. So I'm
having a panic attack listening to this story, but go on, Dave. No,
well, guess what? Okay. I didn't die. So like I spin out and I'm like, I remember I had the phone right there. I was like, if this gets any worse, I'm just calling 911. I'm not even going to mess with the campus health center. They'll judge me. I'm going right to the hospital. and then, okay. So I'm wearing a sport coat. Cause again, very preppy. And I'm feeling my heart and I feel a cassette in the breast pocket and I reach in and I pull it out and it's the first Wilson Phillips album, which I love.
Hang on for one more day, Dave.
Hold on for one more day, Gino. So I put it in my friend's boombox. I rewind to the beginning. Track one is Hold On. And I look in his mirror as Hold On plays. And I say, you hold on, Dave Holmes. You hold on, Dave Holmes. And I like willed
you
myself.
To these girls.
Yes, I willed myself over the hump, and then I hugged everyone I saw. It was unreal, and I've loved that. I loved the song before. I have loved the song ever since. And then I just kind of went on a hugging spree throughout campus.
And you did hold on. For
people said
more than one
Dave Holmes is in a great mood.
That's great. And Now the first time you had sex.
Okay.
One of the guys he hugged after that. Okay.
Cool. Yeah. No, I wish. Good Lord. Let's see. I mean, there's so many, you know, there's like the first sort of, you know, fooling around with a guy. There's first like actual like male, female.
Are you
sex.
What they, so you're not what they call gold star gay. You were,
I am not. I did one exploratory mission.
Wait, before or after? Like the first
after.
Was okay.
Yeah, after.
Just to make sure.
Yeah, but the first like fooling around with a guy that ended. Mm-hmm. I was like 13. I want to say it was summer after seeing Duran Duran. It was a big 84 was a big year, and a friend down the street. Like we would sleep over at each other's houses kind of regularly, and then he was a year or two older. And we watched Risky Business. And after his parents went to bed, we raided the liquor cabinet and we had gin and Diet Slice.
It's a great drink.
And
I'm having another panic attack, by the way.
No,
really?
Totally. What you're having actually is a diabetic coma.
Yeah, that's better. Thank you. That is what it feels like. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we kind of started talking about like, you know, sex and stuff. And he asked a few leading questions and I was like, absolutely down to fool around a little bit, which we did. And then this again was 84. So after it was over, the Catholic guilt flooded my brain and I got physically ill because I was so racked with guilt. And I was racked with guilt for loving it. Right.
Right.
And then I got sick and I was like, oh, that's AIDS. I just got AIDS and I'm going to die.
That is how it happens. Yes.
I'm going to die later today. Two young boys just generated AIDS.
Was he the one that helped you realize that you are gay? Did you already think you were gay at that point?
I was already pretty, pretty dick focused.
That's a wordsmith. He writes.
Thanks.
He's a wordsmith.
He's dick focused.
Yeah, I knew, but I was hoping that it wouldn't turn out to be true. He was just like a horny kid. He's married with kids now.
Oh, wow.
He was just like, you know, whatever.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah, and he was not Catholic. So he was just like, hey, why don't
him,
we
it was nothing. Him
enjoy
was
our bodies and not feel bad about it? Which I
will.
Wish I
first
spirit.
Of all, Dave, thank you so much, man. It's just been a real pleasure to talk with you. We're going to run around the circle here and do plugs. We'll start with you, sir. Anything you want to plug that I may have skipped over, anything I didn't mention, right? Or your Twitter, your Instagram, whatever you want to get out there. Get it out there.
I Yeah, well, season two of True Stowray is out now. I'm writing on the regular for Esquire, and I have a podcast called Waiting for Impact coming out this summer, a 10-episode investigative podcast about a pop culture mystery that has been on my mind for 3 decades. That's
wow.
All I'm going to say about it. It's coming out in July. I do a show with my friend Scott Gimple, who's the showrunner for The Walking Dead. It's like a sketch comedy game show called The Friday 40, where it's 40 questions about the events of the last 7 days while we all drink 40s of beer. It's fun. It'll be next Friday, March 19th. If you follow me on Twitter at Dave Holmes, I'll post the ticket info. It'll be us, Colin Hanks, Michelle Buteau, and musical guest Luke Null.
Live somewhere?
Live here, streaming via.
I thought the way you said it, it was like tickets. So, but
no. Well, I mean, yeah, you got. It's like $5 to watch the.
Oh, to
stream.
Watch. Okay, I got you now. I'm sorry, I misunderstood you.
But yeah, it's through a comedy theater called Dynasty Typewriter in LA, and the proceeds go to help keep them afloat through lockdown.
Awesome, Gino, your plug, sir.
Love Michelle Buteau. Give her a smooch for me. Say that Gino guy says hey. Okay. Yeah, just you know, GinoBiscani.com. Touring all over. I'm in Delaware this weekend. I don't know when this airs, but you know, In Hot Water 4 days a week. You got to come by, Ralph, and do In Hot Water.
I'm ready.
Can you come by? You're going to come hang with us?
I'll come hang. You say when? I'm fully vaccinated. I don't care.
After this, you ready? Watch. I'll send you and Ari an email. We'll do it. Dave, it's a fucking pleasure, man. Goddamn pleasure,
it's
buddy.
It's really good meeting you.
Shannon, your plugs and your cat's plugs?
Follow me.
They're so cute.
Follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts.
And I ask everybody this. Dave, do you believe in ghosts?
Yeah, I a little bit do. Yeah, I've had a couple experiences.
Okay, right. Good. That's good. You just made Shannon very happy. And then lastly, Ani Moosh, come on, turn on your camera. Give us your plug.
Ani!
Here I am with my
SDR.
SDR
merch. I never mentioned this, by the way. Go to podcastmerch.com/SDR. Get one of those cool hoodies. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. And follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Ani_Moosh and check out my website at AniMooshMedia.com.
Okay. Either follow me over at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other show, which is on health and wellness, called The Good Sugar Podcast with the founder of Juice Press, comes out every Monday. Dave, not to brag, but since we brought up books and I haven't talked about this in a while, I did write my own book that went to number 77 on Amazon in its category, The 100% Guaranteed Guide to Weight Loss and Fitness.
Chapter one
is Eat Less. Chapter two is Work Out More. And the rest of the book is blank.
I gave a copy to my brother, Ralph, and he literally said, are all of your friends like this? And I said, yeah. Yeah. He's like, you're all idiots. I'm like, we are.
We're all idiots. Wow. Yeah, so thank you so much, Dave. It really was a pleasure to talk with you.
Yeah, it was great talking with you guys.
And how do we not do this for the song of the week at the sdrshow.com? It is going to be Hold On by Wilson Phillips.
Yes.
We'll add that to the playlist, and we'll see everyone next week on the SDR Show.
Listening to the SDR Show.